He's Nate Force Choker Burgess.
And he is Phil Big Papa Guerrera DeLuca. And we are Commanderin.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for coming to hang out with us for this special episode. This episode, as you can probably tell by now, is something different from the usual Commanderin fare. We're going to be talking about Star Wars Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to read that spoiler warning?
Spoiler warning! This special episode of Commanderin features a review of Star Wars Rogue One, the film. We will give you ample warning before we begin talking about the film, and we will contain all spoilers until after that point, which is going to be pretty soon.
Pretty soon.
However, once past that point, we will be spoiling the movie. You have been warned. We will be warned. And you have no one to blame but yourself if you hear anything you didn't want to hear. Now on with the show.
Hey, did we mention there would be spoilers this episode?
I just said it, man.
Oh, okay.
I just talked about that.
Did we mention spoilers?
Yep.
All right. So just to be clear, again, we're going to let you know when to tune out if you haven't already seen the movie. Now is not that time to do this properly. We've brought on a special guest, an expert in all things Star Wars, haven't we, Nate?
Mm-hmm.
This guest will never, ever make a mistake while referencing something from the movies.
Dun, dun, dun.
Please welcome Andy Hutt.
Who? Hello, it's me, Andy Hutt.
Hutt?
Hull.
Hull?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ha ha.
You got it. That's the closest, I suppose.
It is. That's about it. That's all we're getting.
Although my downstairs neighbor the other day on Twitter called me R5D4.
Yeah.
He said that was me. And I said, you mean the droid that purposefully blew his motivator to make sure that R2 would be able to carry on with his mission? What a treat. I'd be honored. That is the actual canon of R5D4, by the way.
Mm. Oh, that it intentionally blew its motivator.
Yeah. Doesn't that suck?
Why would it do that?
Because it knew that R2 had a mission, and he wanted to keep C-3PO and R2-D2 together so they could complete that mission.
No, you are kidding me.
I'm not kidding.
Wow.
I think it was created by the CCG, which I think that stuff's been erased, right? Like, or
yeah, that's not canonical. That's not canon anymore.
Like, I know the after canon stuff isn't, but I don't know about the pre stuff. But I guess not, right? That's all legends now, or whatever it's called.
Mm. I mean, before Disney paid Lucas absurd sums of money, Lucas had dismissed all of the expanded universe except, you know, anything that appeared in the movies.
Oh yeah, Lucas did, but they, like, whatever.
I know
that doesn't count.
So that whole series of books where Han and Leia had a son named Jason Solo, but they spelled it wrong, and he became evil and a Sith Lord. That's all non-canonical.
Yeah, that's all non-canonical.
But that's non-canonical because of Disney, right? Like once they made Force Awakens, they're like, okay, that stuff is now at Star Wars Legends, because obviously it can't exist in the same universe as Force Awakens.
I mean, unless it happens again.
Well, I mean, yeah. Well, some stuff they took from that canon, like Grand Admiral Thrawn appeared on Rebels, and you know he now exists in the new universe. So that's from the old expanded universe. Anyways, we're not here to talk about the expanded universe, right? We're here to talk about the very narrowed down universe we only see in the films, and specifically this specific movie.
Yes, but first we're going to talk a little bit about you.
Oh, okay.
We're going to pretend that we have a listener who does not already know who you are and what podcast you're from.
Oh, I'm sure there are many, but if you don't already know, I co-host the Commander's Brew podcast with my co-host Sean Tavares, where we brew budget commander decks and talk about, you know, commander cards and all sorts of things on there. I've also been writing articles for MTG Canada. I write commander articles for them. I actually just finished one last night about one drops you can play in commander that are white, which is kind of weird. But also I'm on the newly launched EDH Rec articles page. Jason Ault gathered a bunch of writers together and asked them to create content for EDH Rec, our beloved commander, like, beacon on the internet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been fun.
Yeah, that was really cool. How did you get involved with them?
That's all Jason Ault. He, I guess, was sort of the head honcho over there as far as the articles go. And he just put he just asked people he liked, and I was writing for Brainstorm Brewery every once in a while on their article site, but then Jason shut that down, and I guess partnered up with EDH Rec. Oh,
I wondered that.
Yeah.
Cool. So he's basically transferred the article flag to EDH Rec, and Brainstorm Brewery is now just the podcast.
I believe so. Yeah. I'm not entirely sure, but yeah, there's definitely no more articles on Brainstorm Brewery.
Did he set it on fire and burn it down?
I feel like they just burned it to the ground, just really said, this is it, we're done with this. Yeah, exactly. So, so check that out, edhrec.com and also mtgcanada.com.
Very cool, very cool.
Oh, did you guys want to know about my Star Wars chops? That's written here. I'll mention that real quick.
Yeah.
I wrote for a web series called Space Janitors, where it was largely based in the Star Wars universe, a fake Star Wars universe, but the Star Wars universe.
Well, tell us a little more about that.
Well, that was on Geek and Sundry a couple of years ago, which is Felicia Day's YouTube channel and now a very popular Twitch channel.
Yeah.
Yeah, where it was about two janitors who worked on the Death Star. And their misadventures, if you will. You really have to know your Star Wars stuff to pull out those references a lot. So that was the way I did that is by years of watching Star Wars and, as I mentioned earlier, playing a lot of the CCG, which I really feel like not a lot of people did. But it's actually how I got into Magic.
The Wizards card game, right?
The Wizards card game?
Back in the day, the CCG.
No, you mean like Wizards of the Coast?
Yeah.
They had one, but they had the second one, the one that wasn't very good.
Dope.
Yeah, there's two of them. The one I'm talking about was by, I can't remember. I know this, but it just slipped my mind.
Pressure's on.
Anyways, whatever. But it's what got me into Magic, but it's far more complicated, and you constantly need a 200-page PDF rules as you play it, which when I was introduced to Magic after playing the Star Wars CCG, I was like, oh, this is much easier. Decipher is the name of the company that made it. And they also did the Star Trek one, which is also pretty good, I hear. But anyways, overly complicated, but was official canon. So anything they printed in that CCG, basically the flavor text of all those cards became actual Star Wars canon. And I'm 90% sure that's where the R5-D4 story came from. And lots of other weird, dumb things came from there. But I do love it. It is a really fun game. It's just very hard to know everything about it.
Yeah.
Rules wise.
No, I was mistaken. That is the card game I was thinking of, I think.
Yeah, you were. You were thinking of the Decipher one, because the one made by Wizards was like not popular and very short lived.
Mm. Well, how about that? How about them chops, Nate?
All right.
Well, as listeners can no doubt tell, Sean is not with us in this episode.
Mm.
What's he doing, Nate?
I have no idea. Something British. Maybe he's LARPing in the Scottish Highlands.
Yeah, last time he was harvesting crumpets, so you think now he's LARPing in the Scottish Highlands?
Sure, why not?
Sounds like him.
Do you think he's LARPing a single malt Scotch brewer?
No, he was like a magician assassin kind of dude.
Oh, yeah, he's the shadow assassin type.
And right now he's pinned down and he's hiding behind the remnants of Hadrian's Wall and holding a few pieces of cardboard that he can throw at people and say, fireball!
It's true. It's true. So we'll get periodic updates about Sean through the episode, won't we?
Sure, why not?
As an aside, maybe we'll do a little interview with Sean in the field. In honor of our Commander's Brew guest here.
Ooh, that'd be good.
Boy.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Well, good luck, Sean. Once again, I want to thank Donna from Geeky Tees in Burbank. She's giving our listeners a 20% discount. Andy, what would you do with a 20% discount on anything?
On anything? I'd buy so much of it that the 20% discount equaled like $1,000 so that I could say I saved $1,000.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like 200 seats at her store.
Yeah. What kind of store is it? It's Geeky Tees? Is it like a t-shirt store or like a tea store?
It's actually a tea store. It's a game store that sells table space, teas, and games. Yeah, it's a tease store.
It's a burlesque. Geeky burlesque.
I it also could be like tea's store, a t-shirt store,
yeah,
tea and coffee store, or just they sell like wooden tees for architects, like tee squares.
Oh, golf tees.
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah, there's also tees. Yeah, golf tees. Oh man, there's so many.
I was thinking stormtrooper corsets.
Last time I was there, they had the she had the 501st Legion come and host Star Wars bingo. Believe it or not.
They do that here in Toronto also. I've heard of this. I didn't get so deep into it that I wanted to dress up as a stormtrooper all the time.
No?
No, but I did almost go to my high school graduation as a stormtrooper. But I think wisely decided against it.
What? Why? Wait, hold on. How could that be wise?
Well, I don't know, man. Looking back on it now and seeing pictures of me as like a stormtrooper, would that have been really like... Maybe I would have been happier now than I was at the time, because at the time I feel like I just wouldn't have really worked, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, my date was the one who decided that I shouldn't do it, and she was right.
Oh. Your date to your graduation?
Oh, yeah, we call prom grad here.
Oh.
Yeah. Although wearing it to the actual ceremony, which we call commencement, would have been very cool, and I should have thought of that.
Yeah, you really should have done that.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been way better. I didn't know how the armor was like, because working on space generators, we had stormtrooper armor, and like it's really hard to move around in, and it's like hard and it's loud. I mean, we had the crappy stuff. Like, there's more expensive, slightly quieter, better stuff, but I wouldn't have been able to afford that. So I would have definitely had the crappy, loud stuff that it's like impossible. You can't even sit down in it.
That's why stormtroopers are bad shots. They're just really uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how they do anything in those things.
Yeah. Do they have panels so they can go to the bathroom?
It's a real, again, judging on my experience on space janitors, it's a real ordeal to go to the bathroom if you're a stormtrooper. You have to take pants off and like a cod piece and like, oh, what a mess.
Did Decipher cover that part?
Decipher, the card game?
Yeah, did they cover that in their canon, like how stormtroopers go?
I bet you they did somewhere.
They probably did.
They were good with that sort of thing. They're very good in keeping you up to date with how you uncover a stormtrooper's cod piece.
There must be an instruction manual.
Yeah, exactly. Comes with it's written inside your helmet as a trooper.
Just don't vomit in that helmet and occlude the instructions. Then you'll be really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to the main topic, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, we're really going to get into some spoilers now. So it's time to tune out if you haven't seen the movie. We're going to play about 30 seconds of music. You might recognize it. It won't be music from the new movie, because that music is unrecognizable crap. Whoops. To give you some time, you can reach for your player, stop it, and whatever. So here's 30 seconds of music.
Break. I could have done with just 10 seconds of music.
Yeah.
Or even 5.
I know. 30 seconds seems unreasonable until you realize that, you know, some people like will reach for their player and slip and not turn it off in time, and then they'll hear a spoiler or two and be so angry at us they'll unsubscribe or whatever angry people do to podcasts.
They'll skip. I guess 30 seconds is only 2 skips on your 15-second thing, so you're good.
Yeah, you're fine. All right, here with a plot summary, Nate Burgess.
Oi. All right. Rogue One is the story of Blue Squadron, and as Jason Alt says, if you don't remember Blue Squadron from A New Hope, there is a reason for that. Dun, dun, dun. So there's this scientist dude, and he has a family, and the Empire wants to kidnap him and his family to make this big super weapon, and they kind of do, almost. And he has a daughter, and she gets raised by this rogue general guy until she's a teenager, and then he abandons her. And then some more stuff happens. This pilot sneaks out some plans from the father guy, or a message, that says, hey, there's this super weapon and it's got a weakness. So how about you get on that, Rebellion? And so the message gets passed around a few times. And let's see, then what happens?
There's some things that blow up.
Yeah.
There's a betrayal or two, but then a redemption. We get to see the super weapon used.
And so this motley band of heroes assembles from a bunch of individual characters who get together and say, yeah, let's do this rebellion thing and get this plans from the secret base, and we'll send it to the rebellion. And they have a pretty cool fight about it in space and on the planet.
Yeah, that is a pretty cool fight. And then, of course, the rebellion gets the message about the new super weapon.
Mm-hmm. With Darth Vader hot on their heels.
Hot.
Hot. Sexy Vader.
Mm-hmm.
He wipes that hall room clean. I mean, I was watching that. I was reminded of video games I played, and it was great.
Yep.
I did that. Smash.
I've held a guy to the ceiling and cut him in half.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we could just skip the entire movie and just talk about Vader's scenes.
Oh, that's cool with me. Yeah.
Lots of people do agree with that.
Andy, what do you have to add to that? Anything?
Not really, no.
I've watched it twice, the second time with my kids, and my daughter turned to me at the end of the movie and she said, all the main characters died.
Yep.
And I'm like, yep.
They do, all of them, yep.
So.
Yeah.
Happy times.
So before we get into details, this is a Disney movie, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Technically, yes.
The protagonist's mother is dead within the first 10 minutes. Disney style.
Yeah, she is. And it didn't really matter, though, in non-Disney style. Like, do you notice that she didn't even mention her mother at all? Ever?
Yeah.
It was all about, and I get it why it was all about her dad, but like, you weren't that upset about your mom dying, it seemed.
She watched her mother get shot to death.
Yeah.
By a, what are they called? Death troopers? The black stormtroopers?
Yeah, death troopers.
Death troopers.
Krennic's death troopers, who speak a weird other language.
Yeah, that was really strange.
Like, they speak the same language as the probe droids, it sounded like.
Pretty much. Maybe they are probe droids.
Ooh, maybe.
So the first few minutes of the movie I thought were just awesome, right? We got everything that Star Wars should be and that The Force Awakens really wanted to be but didn't know how to execute on. It was just bouncing between world after world, different worlds, including that really cool, what is it, something's ring?
Yeah.
With the two asteroids linked together. That was awesome.
That was cool. I will say though that while I also enjoyed the very beginning of the movie, the jumping around the different locations, it was like, I don't know why they were telling me the names of all the planets, because it didn't matter. And then they just stopped doing that halfway through the movie. And also that asteroid thing, which I agree was so cool, didn't seem like it was from a Star Wars movie, but that didn't bother me. Like, I'm not saying that was a negative thing. It was nice to see something new, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that seemed way more out of, like, Guardians of the Galaxy or something.
Well, there were a number of things that were different.
Yes, definitely.
I mean, it didn't have a text crawl, so it's the first Star Wars movie not to have a text crawl.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of get it because it was, they really wanted a gritty film, and Star Wars with a text crawl is intentionally pulpy.
Yeah.
So that was a step away from that. But they did have the overhead pan, only this time it was the rings of that planet as the shuttle flew through it.
Yeah, and it did you guys also think that it was the Star Destroyer when it started? Because it was like a triangle shape and it was white. And I was like, oh, cool, another Star Destroyer. And then it wasn't. I was like, oh, you tricked me. Pretty good.
Yeah, it was clever misdirection.
Yeah.
Anybody who recalls last year's Star Wars review on Commander, and it was there was so much misdirection in that movie, but none of it was clever. It was all done just to fool the viewer, and they kept trying to fool the viewer. And this one, though, this was clever. It started out as a wedge shape and then resolved into rings around a planet. That was very nice.
Yeah, that was cool.
So do we want to go character by character here and talk about each of these characters and their shining moments, if there were any?
Cool. Let's do it.
So the main character, Jyn Erso, without a doubt the main character, played by Felicity Jones. strong female lead.
Certainly.
When I originally wrote my notes, I think I was a little too hungry.
What did you write? Like, looked like a sandwich.
No.
I keep seeing her arms and legs as turkey legs.
They just end in little knobby bones. I couldn't help myself.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like Bugs Bunny starving, and I'm sitting next to Elmer Fudd or whatever. I keep seeing him as a turkey. Anyways, carry on.
After watching it the first time, it seemed as if they had to kind of mute the fact that this was a strong female lead in a Star Wars film. Right, she was kind of always being told what to do. She did take control toward the end, and that was great. And basically, when she had the all-volunteer squad of rebels, mm-hmm. right, she kind of took control. But up until that point, she was being told what to do. She was basically doing everything for Daddy and was given a male chaperone. Like, I just kind of felt like they muted that as if they didn't want to take too much of a risk, but it did turn around in the middle of the movie. And then when I saw it the second time, those aspects were not so prominent. So, yeah.
Yeah, I see what you're saying with those points. But I felt like that it all made sense, and it was all made to serve the story. I didn't feel like any of it was, you know, some reaction to having we have a female lead, so we must have a male chaperone. Like, I didn't feel like that was why they made that choice with, making Cassian and her go on this mission together. It felt more to me like she was such a badass and this mission was so important. They needed her so badly that they just couldn't, you know, they needed to make sure it happened. So they were just like, okay, well, we got to make sure that she doesn't like go rogue. but I will say this, I was very disappointed that they cut the line, the I rebel line, like from the trailers. Like, I mean, maybe it ended up being cheesy or something, but like that was a very exciting line in the trailers and a very memorable one. To cut that out seemed a bit strange to me.
Mm-hmm.
Can't trust the mainstream media,
I guess. Or you can't trust the audiences who watch movies and tell them to reshoot. Like the test audiences, I guess, didn't like that line or something. Or some higher up bozo in a suit. She rebels? What does that even mean? I thought, yeah. Yeah, what do you mean you rebel?
Who's she rebelling against?
I have a teenage daughter. I get enough rebellion at home.
Oh, enough with the rebellion.
First of all, it's pronounced rebel. Why is she saying rebel? That doesn't even make any sense. Get that out of there. And put in R2-D2 and C-3PO, please. I need to see them again. What type of movie am I watching? I don't understand unless they're in it.
Yeah. Is this a Star Wars film?
Yeah, put them somewhere in it. Somewhere. Yeah, I guarantee you that's what happened there. But yeah, I actually really love Jyn Erso, and a lot of people I've been hearing say who are criticizing this movie, the criticisms are pretty valid, I think. But one thing that I just am not hearing any of when they say it is this: they didn't feel like Jyn Erso was like a fleshed out character. But I was very, very into the Erso family and their struggle. I was very connected,
yeah,
and was very into that the father-daughter relationship, and I thought it was the best part of the movie.
Yeah, even though they only actually had a couple of seconds together.
Yeah.
Right. It felt like they were very connected. And that message, that holographic message he sent to her.
Oh,
that
please.
Was amazing.
I was tearing up both times. Yeah. No joke. I thought it was well done. And they didn't spend so much time on their backstory. Yes, I agree. But I think we had enough to get this character. Like, I understood her, where she was coming from, what her motivations were. Like, what else do you need?
Right.
Do I need a 20-minute long scene of her and some guy rolling in the grass, and then that guy, like, I don't need any of that stuff. I get it.
Yeah.
She had a troubled childhood. Her parents were killed. Now she's, you know, running away from her problems. Bam. Gotcha.
She does have the superpower of climbing.
The super what?
She has a superpower of climbing things.
Hey, Does she?
At the Imperial hidden base, she climbed up that huge ladder to get up to the platform.
Oh, yes, yes.
And then at the end, with the data tower and those, you know, pointy metal sphincters, I don't know what they were for.
Yeah.
You know, sphincters got a sphink, I guess.
Yeah, you're right. You know what? She does. Sphincters got a sphink. But you did say that someone's superhero or someone's superpower is climbing, even though she was climbing a ladder in one of the examples you gave.
Yeah, but she's not afraid of heights at all, apparently.
Oh, no, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Well, I thought the same thing. That's like that was a kilometer long ladder.
It's a pretty big ladder, yeah.
I mean, I was thinking, man, she's got some upper body strength there.
Your legs are also on a ladder, though, don't forget.
Yeah, but have you tried climbing a ladder for more than like 20 rungs?
I certainly have not. Why would I have ever done that? Like, no way. I've never done that. I've never had to climb a building via ladder.
Oh my God. Especially when you're trying to get away. That's why parkour was invented.
I'll go as far as to say the most rungs of a ladder I've ever climbed is 8. I don't think I've ever climbed any more than 8 rungs of a ladder.
Because at that point, you see the warning label saying, stop climbing.
Yeah, this is not a step. You know what I mean? I'm not stepping on it. That, the paint goes there. I know that's not a step. Although maybe, have I been to the top of a diving platform? I don't even think I have. Because I got no business being up there. I'm not jumping down. Forget it.
Yeah, Right. That's just dumb.
Most of my my business is just on a regular diving board. That's where all my diving business is taken care of.
2 rungs. That's the limit on the diving board.
Oh my God. Please. Maximum 2 rungs.
Even then,
questionable. So Jyn Erso, ladder climber. It's very I loved her. I love Jyn Erso, and I thought Felicity Jones did. I thought she does a good job, even though I've also heard very mixed reviews on her, even her performance.
Really?
In preparation for this, I was reading some reviews by reputable critics, not just bozos on the internet. And some of them thought it was like a spotty performance. They thought there were some areas where she wasn't solid. I disagree. I thought she did a great job.
Yeah. She's no Natalie Portman.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to get into that.
That's a good thing.
All right, Natalie, what I want you to do is just stand there and look like a piece of cardboard.
Exactly. Let's put the blame squarely where it belongs for Natalie Portman's poor job. It's not on her.
It is not, right.
So what about my boy Cassian? What about my boy Captain Cassian Andor? What did you guys think of him? Because this is another guy who I've actually heard more negative things about than positive things.
Well, he starts out as a bad Han Solo, and then halfway through, turns into a good Han Solo.
Yeah, right.
Except the whole cold-blooded murderer willing to take orders from someone who is on the council, but not acting directly on behalf of the council. Like, I understand that you need a wet works team in any kind of pseudo-governmental organization. Hello, cynicism. But the fact that the council would say, go do this, and then this guy's like, hey, come here. Let me talk to you, kid.
See, I felt like that. I can't remember that character's name right now.
He doesn't have a name.
Oh, he must.
No, he doesn't.
The redheaded dude?
Let's check the Decipher card game.
Yeah, they have everything. Okay, well, at any rate, I felt like Cassian was that guy's boy. General Draven, that's who it is. I thought General Draven's like go-to guy to get like dirty work done was Cassian. And that's what I just naturally assumed by the way Cassian was so quick to be like, yep, we need to do this. And obviously earlier in the movie, we saw Cassian just murder a guy because he couldn't climb a bunch of buildings.
Which explains why he never
murders Jyn, because she's very good at climbing.
She's a very good climber.
Very good climber.
That's what keeps you alive in this world.
Exactly.
When you got skyscraper ladders.
It's true, isn't it?
Yeah, man.
We established that real early on.
Mm-hmm. Like, he must have been so impressed when she was climbing that ladder.
Huh.
Ooh, I don't have to murder her after all.
I was going to shoot her
the whole time. But yeah, so I wasn't bothered by that. But it's not like it was a huge jump I made in my mind to like explain that. I was just like, oh yeah, Draven wants him to do this and he does it. I also thought there's a possibility that everything the council said to Jyn Erso in that scene where they were telling her that we're going to go extract your father and blah, blah, blah. I thought there was a possibility that all of that was bullshit and they were just saying that for her sake. And then Draven told Cassian what the council really wanted him to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just a rogue thing.
You think Mon Mothma was...
Murder him.
Whoa.
I just think it's a possibility. I'm not saying that it's guaranteed to be that or anything, but I thought, I was like, oh, well, it's either of these two things, and I'm fine with whichever one it is.
I'm with you.
You might call that like wishy-washy on the writing, like they didn't make it clear, but I don't know. I didn't need it to be that clear, I thought. It was kind of fun to like, you know, make your own connections.
Yes.
Right? Some people would be critical of that, and they wouldn't necessarily be wrong, but... For me, I liked it.
Yeah, you like filling in the gaps that the filmmakers
leave. I really do. That's kind of half the fun of stories, I think. Well, look, we all did it in the original Star Wars, right? We all did stuff like that. When Obi-Wan tells Luke about the Clone Wars, we just totally filled in what the Clone Wars was. No one was like, oh, they mentioned the Clone Wars. They didn't even tell us what it is. Like, you know, that's what people did about this movie. They're like, oh, Jyn Erso, where is she from? I don't know. Who cares? Doesn't matter.
Who was saying that about where she's from?
I don't know. Maybe nobody, but...
You just made that up, man.
What's her mom's name again? I don't know. She's dead. Get over it.
She's dead.
Yeah, anyways.
What was Bambi's mom's name?
Yeah, exactly. Not important, right? Who's the hunter that killed Bambi? Just shut up.
Look, Jyn Erso doesn't even care what her mom's name is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. She doesn't care. You shouldn't care.
Yeah, unfortunately... He has the exact same voice and basic cadence, and I don't think it's just the accent, right, of Inigo Montoya.
Now, are you saying that as a negative thing? Because that's a very beloved screen character.
Oh, I think that if you're going to have a character, it should probably not sound like a very beloved and recognizable other character.
I see.
So, yes, in this case, for Captain Cassian Andor, played by Diego Luna, shouldn't have sounded like an Inigo Montoya. But, you know, again, that may just be because...
I think that's just how that actor speaks. And I do think you're tying most of that to his accent, I must say. I must be the contrarian here.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Nate agrees with me, see? He gave his patented mm-hmm.
He did. That means I must now withdraw my complaint.
Well, no, I'm not saying you're wrong. I just think that maybe it's probably more the accent. Like, if he didn't have the accent, you wouldn't be like, he sounds like an Inigo Montoya.
Yeah. I do like the moment where he turns it all around, though, and she's like, you were sent to kill my daddy. And he's like,
yes.
So what? You know? And it's like, oh, yeah. He's like, I don't have that luxury.
Yeah, you don't know what you're talking about.
I had to do some it was bad.
Yeah. I did, too. I love that speech, that, like, monologue there in the ship. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
And I love Baze's, what's his name? Baze Malbus. I loved his reaction to it when he's like, any of you have anything to say? And he just lies down. That's one of my favorite parts. He's just like, ugh, f- this, man. I don't want to deal with this guy.
Yeah, he just flops back. He's like, whatever.
Yeah. Loved it.
Yeah. All right.
But I did love that part. And it's like, again, like I'm trying not to be like a Star Wars fanboy about this, you know? I really am trying to look at it with a critical eye. And I've seen it twice, so like I went in more critical the second time, admittedly. But I just didn't really have a problem with Diego Luna. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Previous complaints notwithstanding.
Yeah.
It was very cold. He was a very cold character, not a typical Star Wars character either. You know, the Han Solo comparison kind of, for me, it seemed like he was Han Solo until he shot the dude who couldn't climb in the back.
I love that. I loved that so much. Like, it really shows the darker side of the rebellion, and I thought it was really good.
Yeah. I wasn't sure I wanted to be a rebel anymore.
Right? He just murdered this guy who was rightfully worried about them getting caught. It's like, well, sorry, bud. Your arm's broken. You're dead to me. You're just a horse. Yeah.
You can't climb.
You can't climb? I hate you.
No witnesses.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, you know, that set the stage really well for Cassian's character to go and obviously perform a murder on Galen Erso.
Yeah. Yeah, it showed you he was capable of doing it.
Exactly. You might even say that that's exactly what they planned.
Almost as if it were written.
Exactly.
Into the story.
Sort of like that, I would say.
So speaking of Galen Erso.
Yes.
What do we think about him?
Nate, what'd you think?
He was all right. He had gravitas and the kind of quiet desperation that he needed.
Yeah. I thought, well, obviously Mads Mikkelsen is a very good actor.
Yeah.
So I think he really performed the hell out of this pretty small part, considering how important it is to the story. But like the actual screen time is fairly small. But I think he was like pretty much the second most important character for me when I was watching the movie. And you wrote here meaningless death, right? And like that's... So that is exactly what it is, right? And it's by the rebellion because they attacked and everything. It's so perfect. I just love that they were so cutthroat in trying to go after him and get him. And they accidentally killed him at the end, which is perfect. But I thought the performance was great, and I loved Galen Erso. I love the explanation that he builds in the flaw in the Death Star.
Yeah.
Like, thank you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what prequels do, is they make the movies that came after them in the timeline, but before them in the real timeline, better. And I really do think Rogue One overall kind of achieves that in making it makes A New Hope make a little bit more sense.
Remember that plot hole that we had? Let's, you got some spackle?
Yeah, right? Like, why is the Death Star blow up from one hit, you know? It's like, oh, here's why.
Yeah.
And it's not, I thought it was handled so well, and Mads Mikkelsen really nailed it.
Yeah, he sold it. I mean, he completely sold it. And I love the echo between, you know, in the very beginning when he says, Director Krennic calls him a bad liar. And then in the hologram, he tells Jin, I had to become a good liar.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, that and like you said, that hologram scene where he's delivering that message to his daughter and she's just staying there crying, like,
right.
Ugh, oh. Please, charged with emotion. I don't know how anyone, I don't know how anyone is cold to that. I thought it was very, very well done.
Is part of this that we are all Star Wars fans?
I think so.
But we didn't accept The Force Awakens just carte blanche.
Mm-mm. No, you're right, yeah. And I wanted to mention that, too, because you guys talked about it. We all heard what you guys had to say, and I thought it was your episode on that was very good at giving two sides of people who generally liked it but had complaints, and I think Sean was the one who really liked it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I had my problems with Force Awakens, too, but I overall thought it's a good thing for Star Wars. It might not be a 10 out of 10 movie. Well, it certainly wasn't, but I think overall for the series, it was good. And as a Star Wars fan, I was happy with it, even though I had some problems. But whereas this, it's the same thing. There's a few problems with this movie, of course. It's not perfect.
Right.
And overall, I think it's good for Star Wars. But I would even say I'm trying to remove myself as much as possible from like the Star Wars side of it. And I think this was just a really cool sci-fi like war movie. I thought it was good.
I agree. I was kind of hoping we would save our summary until the end, but there's just no way to avoid it. I think this is worth seeing. It's worth seeing on the biggest screen you can. I haven't seen it in 3D yet, so who knows what that's like. But go see it, for God's sake. Go see it. Nate even went to see it.
Mm. And Nate, you didn't like Force Awakens, right?
Nah. It was, that was too Disney. It was too J.J. Abrams as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I see that. And like the Death Star again, right? Like enough. I mean, I don't want to get into it, but like, you know, that movie had some, I think where Force Awakens succeeded was with its characters, right? The new characters it brought in. I loved Rey, I loved Finn, and Poe Dameron, I guess, was good too. And obviously Han Solo and blah, 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 whatever. But, Kylo Ren, I thought was great. I really did like Kylo Ren a lot. Whereas this movie, everyone complained about the characters, but I think the story was a lot better. You know what I mean? I think they, like, together they would make one perfect Star Wars movie.
I think
it's not like I hated these characters or anything, because I actually thought they were good.
I think The Force Awakens would reduce the overall quality.
Yeah, you think so?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think it's on the negative end of the Star Wars scale. I think it had to happen. I think that story needed to be told. I think it, as a business, it had to... You know, for the business, rather, it had to happen so that we can see more Star Wars movies and basically transfer the cast. And now we kind of have to because, well, Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
But, like, that transfer had to occur in order to tell more Star Wars movies and stories in movies. And they had to do that, of course, because they spent $4.2 billion on it.
Mm-hmm.
But... I understood why it had to happen. I just wish it had been executed better. There were so many, like my wife said after we saw it the first time. She said, "Well, I feel like I saw a Star Wars movie. We jump from planet to planet, and that's what Star Wars like. That's a hallmark of Star Wars. And I wasn't enraged at the end of this one like I was for The Force Awakens." And I'm like, right, that's the big difference. At the end of The Force Awakens, my wife and I, we were angry.
Oh.
And this one, not so much. Nate is still angry.
Always.
That's his secret.
Yeah, Nate the Rage.
That's the trick.
I wasn't angry at Force Awakens. I like I said, with all its flaws, I thought it was a good first step to doing what you were saying. And I thought the characters are the most important part of that step. So they did that well. And whereas this, it's like the story was the more important part because it's the prequel to another story we already know. So they had to like get that part to make sense, which I thought they did perfectly. So I think overall with these two Star Wars movies, they are doing at least they're doing the most important thing. I think they're doing it right. We can complain about Death Stars, and we can complain about not knowing who Donnie Yen. Donnie Yen, is that his name? Yeah, that Donnie Yen's character's name is, because I still don't know what it is. But at least they got the transition into A New Hope right, and I think at least they got Rey and Finn right in Force Awakens.
Yeah, the transition into New Hope was so well done. Before we gush about that into that particular series of scenes. Mm-hmm. Last of the main good characters, I guess. Main, hard to say, is K2SO.
Right, K2, right, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Favorite droid ever in a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Great.
And also, and I think this still stands, I think it was the only truly meaningful death in the entire movie. Right, like every other death, even after watching it the second time, I felt like every other death was just a little mistimed or diminished the sacrifice that these people were making, right? Like, you know, connect the bolt so that we can send a message, and then a grenade gets lobbed in and he dies. And, you know, and or like after flipping the switch dramatically, then he's shot on the way back. And, you know, that just really, it was like, oh, enough. It's right after the moment of most impact they die.
And I love that. Do you know why?
Because it gives you hope that they're going to get away?
No, because that's like, well, okay, first of all, they all died doing their thing, and they did it, which is good. But I like
No.
Okay, sorry. Go.
They actually died after doing their thing.
Yeah. After they did their thing. So you would have preferred they die like in the middle of it or something?
Yeah, really dramatic death. Like, you know, you look at Donnie Yen's character, who, I'm not looking, Chirrut Imwe? Whatever his name is, I have it written down there.
I think they must have only said it once in the movie, because I was listening hard that second time and still didn't catch it.
It was. They said it twice, and once when Baze yelled "Jermert" or whatever his first name is.
Right.
You know, like when he's doing the whole Force thing and he's walking, and it's like, wow, he's really channeling the Force in order to knock all their shots astray, without, you know, just walking through this hail of gunfire. He puts his hand on the switch and flips it. That's the moment he should have died.
Yeah.
That'd kind of be showing the hand of the writer too much.
Well, that's the Force. The Force did, and the Force allowed him to do his thing and no more. And that was it.
But you're saying you wanted all those guys to die that way then?
Or at least, like, two of them died by grenades. One of them was accidental.
Which is good, because that's war, right? War doesn't pick who dies at the most opportune time. It's like why George R. R. Martin, like, kills off his main characters. I was reading a thing. He said, like, the reason I kill off my main characters like this is because I just want everyone to know that, like, heroes don't always survive war. Just because you're good at what you do doesn't mean you're going to survive a war. So this movie... And I mean, we all knew pretty much that they were all going to die. So it's not like we were angry that these characters died. But I did like that there were, you know, seemingly meaningless deaths, like that grenade that was hucked into the ship that killed what's his name? Roddy?
Yeah, Roddy.
Roddy.
Or Body. Yeah, Roddy. Roddy.
It's Bo. I thought it was Bo. I thought it was a B, but maybe I'm wrong. It's Bodhi. It's Bodhi. It is B.
It is Bodhi, right?
Yeah.
So you notice, though, I put that little character strip up.
Yeah.
And they don't even have Riz Ahmed's? Yeah, Riz Ahmed's character's name in it. He was just the pilot.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
You know, like, whatever his name is, just put it on there.
I liked that Bodhi died that way because it was meaningless. It was just like a stray grenade. It's like, well, that's what happens in the middle of a war. Like, you're just going to get get shot and you're just going to die and you're not going to know where it came from. And it's not poetic.
All right. When I go back to watch it in 3D, I will watch it from the perspective of watching a space war movie.
Yeah. Well, and like it's not really, I guess, a space war movie until that last scene, I guess you could say. In that's the really only like big, massive battle. But it really felt like I was watching a science fiction version of Saving Private Ryan or something. There's explosions and the way I think it's actually largely the sound. The sound design was, I thought, really excellent. That sound of, like, the ground exploding and then hitting the ground in front of you, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff. I thought they did a really great job with that.
Yeah, the scene when I think the city is actually called Knee Jeddah or Jeddah City, right? Mm-hmm. When the crust was rolling back like that, that cracking was insane. That was just cool, so good.
Yeah, very cool. Very neat. But to get back to K2 as being the only meaningful death, I do agree that it was the most like heart-wrenching death. Certainly. Yeah. You're definitely right about that. He was the one I was like, no, the most for. Because he was so great.
Yeah, it was an actual sacrifice in the heat of battle. Like right when it mattered, he sacrificed himself completely.
Yeah, and it was really great. I thought I would be annoyed by another funny droid, you know what I mean? Like a wisecracking droid, you know, like, come on, enough with that. But he is by far the best of all of the droids we've ever seen.
Yeah, and because he wasn't intentionally wisecracking. Sure, he was the comedy relief, except for that brief moment with C-3PO and R2.
Oh, my God.
How did they even get on the blockade runner then, on the Tantive IV? Like, they're standing there watching all of these ships take off to go to the fleet that's already there.
It's a great question. Maybe they picked them up on the way or something from a different ship. I don't know.
I mean, but you're absolutely right. They were just there because some executive was like, you know,
so wait.
It was Kathleen Kennedy.
We're not going to have any of the other characters from any of the old Star Wars movies in this? Sir, we actually have a Mon Mothma's in this and a General Yondo Donna's in it. It's like, who the f*** are they?
Who?
You know what I mean?
Give me more Vader.
Yeah, right?
I want more Vader.
I need another guy like Vader. I need a Star Wars. Oh, I need a recognizable Star Wars character.
You know, Black Armor. Gotta have Black Armor.
Okay, fine. We'll put in 3PO and R2-D2. Yeah, the stupid f***ing droids. Put those guys in. Those guys are idiots. This is the guy who runs Disney.
You broke me. That's funny.
I can't move R2 lunchbox units without putting them in the friggin' movie. So put them in.
How am I going to sell a friggin' lunchbox without R2-D2 on it?
Yeah, exactly. I need to sell these little USBs, and I got C-3PO on them, so put them in the movie.
Yeah. We've already made 10 million of them.
I got to move these units. Yeah, Disney is more primarily now like an importing-exporting company. I got crates of these 3PO pajamas behind me here. I got to move these out of the warehouse. The guys are on my ass. Put them in the movie.
I got to hurry up. Summertime's coming up, and they're extremely flammable.
Extremely flammable.
Extremely. You don't even want to know.
It's printed on toilet paper back here.
It's a cheap too.
Yeah, exactly. It's no-name brand. You know that guy, Andy Hall. He buys it, rips his ass apart. Anyways.
Yeah, so we like K2SO.
Love K2SO.
Best Alan Tudyk death on film yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
I really do. All respect to Wash. But yeah, what about the bad dude? Let's get into this guy.
Orson Krennic.
I will say this about Krennic. First of all, Ben Mendelsohn does a fantastic job. Maybe I think the best acting job in the whole movie. Because he made Krennic, whose like motivation seemed to be by the end of it just to be like, can I see the Emperor?
Yeah.
Does the Emperor like me?
Yeah.
Like he took that, which is so, that's terrible, I think, and turned it into a really good performance. And you made me believe that this character is, just capable of anything and a real bad dude. And I think, that's all credit to the actor because Lord knows his lines and motivation story-wise, I don't think was really there.
Yeah.
And in his little spat with, like, with Tarkin, come on.
With CGI Tarkin.
Ugh. We'll get into that. We'll get into that. But he's great in this. I think Mendelsohn's amazing, and therefore I think Krennic ended up being a great character, and I loved him as a villain. And I love the scene with Vader. I loved it.
So I play a lot of role-playing games, and one of them is called Fate. Right. And every character in Fate has an aspect, has multiple aspects to it. And I kept looking at Orson Krennic and saying, has aspect, wants the attention of the Emperor. Right. And that is absolutely the core of the character. And then everything he does seems to be motivated by that. But you're right. Mendelsohn pulls it off, and he pulls it off really well. That character is incredibly deep and complex for such a simple motivation.
A simple want, right?
Yeah.
It's like that want will do you okay in an improv scene or something like that, but like, you know, in a sketch. But for this whole movie to carry being the main bad guy, the head villain of the whole thing, it's a pretty good lifting job by that actor.
Nate, what was your favorite scene with Orson Krennic?
Oh, I'm just reminded of the Batman movie where Bane flops his hand on his shoulder and says, "Do you feel in charge?" I think that's the guy. I think that's the same actor.
That is.
I might be remembering it wrong.
Are you serious? Is he really in that? Oh yeah, The Dark Knight Rises. You're right. Wow, he looks way younger in his.
Yeah, in his IMDb.
That's a pretty good line. Do you feel in charge?
Yeah, so that's my favorite scene with that actor.
Yeah, that's good. I forgot about that part. He was also in Bloodlines, right? That show on Netflix. Apparently, he's also very good at that. I haven't seen it either. My friend was telling me about it, saying how like he's like the star of that show. He gives the craziest performance in it. Yeah, he's in Bloodline.
Hmm. I, believe it or not, still have not seen A Dark Knight Rises, so.
Oh. It's okay. No.
Spoiler.
Yep.
That guy dies.
Oh, no. What is it about Ben Mendelsohn's characters? They all die. Well, maybe they don't all. I haven't seen everything by Ben.
Well, he's got the Alan Tudyk contract.
Alan, by the way, K2SO is the only one that passed the Jadzia Dax death rating scale.
What's that?
So my wife and I have this thing ever since we watched Deep Space Nine and we watched Jadzia Dax get killed,
mm-hmm.
right? She was basically written out of the show in a huff because she chose to go on some other show, right?
Right.
And the writers were like, "Fine, you're dead." Boom. And that was it. And then there was a little scene like she's shot, she's dead. Worf is like, "Ugh!" And then no one ever mentions it again, right? And we looked at it and we watched that scene and we were like, this is a character we've now seen for 5 seasons of a Star Trek series, which, mm-hmm. you know, and Deep Space Nine, I thought was pretty good, right?
The end of it I really liked.
Yeah, and so here we are, we're watching this whole thing. Jadzia Dax dies, no emotional impact. It was one of those, like, you could practically see the screenwriters reach through the TV and just flip her off, right?
Yeah.
And no emotional impact. And K2's is the only death that actually has an emotional impact that's greater than Jadzia Dax's death.
How much of that Jadzia Daxing do you think that they, like, you're completely right. They obviously wrote her out in a... like, screw you. But then the fact that they were able to be like, no, there's Ezri Dax. Like, it's the same person. Like, so they were able to say, like, the crew didn't care about it because now she's a symbiote and she just lives in it on anyways.
Well, if you look into the future, sure. Mm. But at the moment of her death.
Oh, you mean the moment. Okay, yeah,
and
okay.
Not even just the moment of her death, but the aftermath of her death before Ezri Dax shows up again.
Yeah.
There's no, like, Worf is like, I'm really sad about this, right? And that's about it. And but to the viewer, we don't know Ezri Dax is coming back.
Right, true, right? Yeah.
And what they did was they basically just, you know, they pooped on a plate and smeared it in her character, in the character, right? And it was an incredible letdown. It was a moment where it could have been this incredible singular moment in a Star Trek franchise.
Should have been, for sure, yeah.
Right, where this main character, not like, you know, oh, Ensign, does that say Mikkelsen? right, it's not like that. It's Jadzia Dax. She died,
yeah.
No impact. And K2SO, the only one where we actually cared about the death. All of the others, it was like, okay. And what is with Diego's last expression? He looks down like, well, are we done with this? And then and then the heat wave envelops them. Anyway.
He was thinking, hot, 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 hot.
Yeah, like, whoa, this is getting hot. Was he? Yeah, anyway, that's my big complaint about the deaths in the movie, right? And the only one that even comes close is actually Forrest Whitaker's.
Oh, really? I think more Galen Erso's came closer for me. I thought there wasn't a more meaningless death than Forrest Whitaker's. I thought Saw Gerrera, really? That's how he dies? He's going to be like, I'm tired of running. What? You have metal feet. How are you tired?
I'm done.
Yeah, right? Like, to me, that's lame as hell. Like, they did that. They tried to do the same thing Obi-Wan did, but it just is not. Saw Gerrera didn't help them escape. Saw Gerrera just saw the blowing, like, the rocks coming at him and was like, well, it's going to be tough for me to make it to that ship on time, so I guess I'll just hang out here.
I got these metal feet.
You know?
They don't run like they used to.
Come on. This guy's supposedly so dedicated to the rebellion that he's willing to be, like, overly violent and everything about it and take matters into his own hands, yet when they're about to go stop this massive threat, he's just like, keep the dream alive! Like, that's what you say? No. No. Sorry. That was this...
Do it for the children.
Yeah, like I'm glad we got to a part of this movie that I didn't like, and this is certainly one of those parts. They needed to have him die, so that's like to follow the format of the hero's journey or whatever, and so they were just like, okay, well, he's tired of running? Sure, yeah. Sure. He seems like he's out of breath all the time. Yeah, that makes sense. But it doesn't.
Yeah, you can't haul that tank of soporific around on metal feet and run at the same time, so.
How come we couldn't see an attack on that base and Saw Gerrera like die there in like fighting? That would have been cool.
Well, because we couldn't blow up the city at the same time.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't like that part. Or put Saw Gerrera in the city.
I'll give you that Galen Erso's death is more moving than Saw Gerrera's.
Yeah, it is for sure.
Nate had a note about Saw Gerrera.
Oh yeah, if you're going into the meanings of their names and in Star Wars names, like this is kind of wordplay stuff. So Saw Gerrera, Saw is almost a homophone for Saul, S-O-L, which is a Spanish or Latin before that. It means the word sun, like the star in the middle of our solar system. And his last name, Gerrera, if you add a U to the way they spell it, it means warrior. So his name almost literally translates to Star Wars.
Nice.
And if you're not buying that, he was in the Clone Wars animated series, his character was, and he had a sister named Stila Gerrera, and the Earth version of that is Stella, which is short for stellar, and the definition of that is of or relating to a star or stars. So both of them are basically named Star Wars.
Yeah, and they couldn't have named him Saul. I'm like, really, Saw? Like, really? Is that what they did? But then because, like, why can't they just make it S-A-L, like Saul Gerrera? It's like, well, now his name is Sal Gerrera.
Sal.
He's just a guy who works on the construction site, like, building.
Come down to crazy Sal Guerrera's bunker. He got microwaves off for $20.
We got big fat aliens who will read your mind and make you go crazy.
Who needs food packs? We got plenty of food packs. Just 4 credits each.
See rocks coming your way? Give up. Don't ever. Just give up your whole life's purpose.
Don't even try to run.
Yeah, I didn't pay insurance on this place. I'm screwed.
Yeah, my rates are through the roof.
Keep the dream alive. Yeah, Saw Gerrera. Not like this. Okay, what did you guys think of the fact that like this is the guy from the Clone Wars? That seemed to get everyone very excited, right?
I had no idea. I didn't watch the Clone Wars. I think the Clone Wars is an abomination.
Oh.
Well, I also have not watched the Clone Wars, the series. However, I have it on good authority by a person I very much trust that it is actually very good and gets very, very good.
It's not bad for a Star Wars cartoon.
Yeah, like the beginning starts off as being very much a Star Wars cartoon, whereas it eventually turns into really good storytelling and kind of not even really for kids anymore by the end of it. There's a lot of deaths and stuff.
Yeah, well, right from the beginning, the clone troopers, you know, they attempt to personify the clone troopers and then they shoot them in the head.
Yeah.
Right? Numerous shots like that. So there was a severe dichotomy at the very beginning where it was definitely marketed for children, but then the imagery was not appropriate for children. And I think that's Lucas just not understanding what he was doing, right?
Are you talking about the cartoon though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Not the Gennady Tartakovsky, which was brilliant. I'm talking about the
CG cartoon.
Yeah, the CG cartoon that ripped off Gennady Tartakovsky's entire character design. I forget when it was, but it was sometime like second or third season where there was a really good story that took multiple episodes to tell, and it was about some invasion into a
temple or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was that particular sequence was really good, but I was not motivated enough to go back to it. I just thought, like, oh, here's an apprentice to the apprentice, and the secret story of Darth Vader between. Oh, just end it. That's what I thought.
Yeah, like, I can't divorce it from the prequels because I hate the Anakin Skywalker that they built.
I'm sorry, Master. I won't be so emotional next time.
Yeah, that's not my Anakin Skywalker. Sorry. So I can't get into the fact that it's that's who he is. So I guess I'm kind of already going to be separated from the Clone Wars show, no matter how good it is. So that's probably why I haven't been able to get into it. But I've heard good things. But anyways, people were really excited about Saw Gerrera because of that. And I thought that's cool. I think that's good. I like that there's a couple links to the good things that came out of the prequels that people actually like. So I like, because my friend who told me this has kids, and they love the prequels, and they love the original Star Wars even more. So I like that there's a bit of a link for those people, those younger people who like that. But really, I don't know how big he is in the series, but I can't help but feel disappointed for those people, because I thought his character was very disappointing. Like, this is the guy I'm supposed to be excited about? This is the guy? Like, everyone's like, ooh, it's Saw Gerrera from the Clone Wars. It's like, this is the guy you're excited about?
I'm done running.
He sucks. This guy sucks. I don't care about this guy.
Maybe they'll find his body and reanimate it and put spider's legs on him.
That would be so good. I would love that, yeah.
You're referring to Darth Maul in the Clone Wars.
Oh, they've done that?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, he got a couple episodes in there.
Well, it just shows you that series tried hard to fix a lot of things wrong with the Clone Wars. One of them being that they killed Darth Maul. The other that clone troopers were all clones. They tried to actually give them personalities. So I actually approve of those two things.
Did you read the novels about the Star Wars Commando novels?
I hear they're good, but they're really good. I don't know. Yeah,
no, they're really good.
Yeah, I've heard it from multiple sources now that you said that. But anyways, this guy, whatever, right? Like this, when people talk about the characters aren't that we're supposed to care about aren't fleshed out enough or whatever, I think they're 100% right about Saw Gerrera. The other thing though is that Saw Gerrera really was just the quest giver in this movie. That's all he is, right? He just gives her the quest, and then he dies, and that's it.
But here you go.
It's dangerous outside. Take this.
Yeah, totally. Right?
I was once an adventurer like you.
It's dangerous to go alone. Take this ship and all these guys with you. But yeah. So anyway, Saw Gerrera, definitely, I think, one of the more disappointing characters in the movie. And I think they kind of messed up with him.
Yeah. All right. Anything else we want to say about Saw Gerrera?
Yeah.
Bodhi Rook?
Oh, yeah. Bodhi, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Bodhi, right. The Imperial pilot. I was surprised they gave him a name.
Yeah, and his name is Bodhi, which is a real name, even though they spell it weird Star Wars style. But like, that was actually good because it helped me remember his name. It's the reason I didn't know Baze or Chirrut. Like, those aren't real names. Yeah. I don't remember that. So I think it's a good thing.
I did like the character. I thought it was a suboptimal death. It's not a coincidence that the only person getting tortured to hell and back in Rogue One is the amalgamated brown guy. That is a concern of some folks, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's probably a pretty valid thing to say. Although I will say torture to hell and back might be a little bit of a exaggeration. He does get tortured, certainly. But just it's the one time. If someone told me that someone was tortured to hell and back, yeah. But if hear me out, if someone told me that someone was getting tortured to hell and back, I would assume that's more than once, wouldn't you? Hey, this guy.
Oh, it's just once, all in one sitting. Eh.
Oh, so did he really come back from the hell, or was he just in the hell alone? You know what I mean?
You know, was he faking it?
But yeah, he is for sure the only guy. He is the only person who gets tortured. In the movie, for sure. By that weird blobby alien thing, which...
Yeah, the bulgogi.
Yeah, right. That part was weird. Did we need the bulgogi in there? Did we really need that?
Yes, you needed it to get the truth from the Imperial pilot liar.
Because then it didn't even make a difference, did it?
No.
It wasn't like Saw Gerrera was like, take this guy with you. No, he still had him in a jail cell and never told anyone about him. Like... the only reason he gets out is because Baze or whatever, man, whatever Donnie Yen's character's name, Chirrut, is like, who's that?
Yeah, he finally has to call attention to him. Hey, yeah. Who's the other guy over there?
Yeah, and then Cassian knows who he is. So like that part is utterly useless. That big dumb alien looking thing.
Yeah, but we got a new big dumb alien toy to sell.
I suppose. Yeah, yeah, you're right. That guy's got to move units, man. Disney got to move their units.
Hey, we got these big blob toys. What do you want to do with them?
I got 10,000 big blob bubble bath things over here. You push down on his tentacles and he shoots bubble bath out of his nose. Anyways,
yeah.
Put it in the movie. We got to move units here. That's the guy from Disney again coming back.
Yeah. I like this guy from Disney.
Yeah, I love this guy. He's great. He's great. He's only worried about the bottom line. But Bodhi's a pretty small character, really. He ends up, I don't know, at first being the important part, like the, what's it called? I can't remember, the literary device of they all need to get it and, you know.
MacGuffin.
The MacGuffin. And then he's like, that gets taken away from him pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
But he recovers well.
He recovers and helps him out. And yeah, man, like, I don't know. I thought it was good. And same thing. Good job done by Riz Ahmed, who's a very good actor. If you guys have watched The Night Of.
No.
Very good. Very good series. I think it's on HBO. Yeah, really good. He does a great job in that. And you can tell he's got chops. He's good in this one.
Yeah, he carried it off well. Unnecessary plot complication of the rope looping around these weird things. Like, what was he thinking? Was he running all the way around that little barrel and antenna thing? Oh, now it's too short. Oh, I gotta run all the way back around.
I agree with that totally. It's like, what, you've never carried a cord from one place to the other before? What are you doing?
Fair, he was being shot at, but you know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true.
Yeah, maybe he couldn't go there because there were laser beams in that area.
Yeah, laser beams.
Laser beams. We need lasers.
I put lasers in the movie. I got a bunch of laser guns in these crates back here, and I gotta move them.
So, Nate, what was Donnie Yen's character's name? Not Ip Man, but...
Chirrut Imwe. And so some wordplay on that. A cheroot is a cigar with both ends open and untapered, and you often historically see these being smoked by wandering philosopher cowboys.
Ah, see?
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just call him Ip Man, though, really.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. There's a martial arts series called Ip Man, and in the third movie, he fights Mike Tyson. There's a scene where they...
Wow.
Mike Tyson doesn't say a word.
Because it would kind of break the scene, the tension of the scene.
But there's a lot of punching and kicking and
there
stuff.
There is a lot of punching and kicking and stuff. Have you seen that, Andy?
I've not seen Ip Man, no.
Oh.
But now I really will. I've been told by every single person who's seen this movie now that I have to watch Ip Man.
Yeah, it's pronounced Ip Man, but nobody pronounces it that.
Everybody
Ip Man. And the entire series, including with Mike Tyson, is really good. And maybe because of Mike Tyson, number three is really good.
Yeah,
He's like the, what was the Russian boxer, Drago?
Yeah, Ivan Drago.
Mm-hmm. Ivan Drago, that's it, yeah. He's the Ivan Drago of the Ip Man series.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Careful, you're heaping an awful lot of praise on a rapist.
Well, yeah. I'm not saying Mike Tyson is
no, I know.
A good human being at all. But like when this movie series needs to go over the top, they bring in Mike Tyson, who is not known as a rapist in Hong Kong, apparently. So
yeah, well, it's a good way to do it, I think. So I definitely will check it out.
Yeah.
But this guy is the one that everyone's talking about. Donnie Yen is the guy everyone mentions when they come out of this movie, whether they liked it or not. They tend to say, Donnie Yen was sick. Like, all the scenes with him were awesome. And they are, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they did a great job of having a Jedi in this movie, but it not being a Jedi.
Yeah, that they did. It's a Star Wars movie. You have to have a good Force-sensitive user. And this one did not have a lightsaber. Although, you notice the handle on his staff at the top, that was a lightsaber handle.
Oh, I did not notice that. Very cool.
Yeah, that was a nice nod.
Yeah, and I mean, this has probably been talked about to death by everyone, but the wills, of course, you know, the Journal of the Wills, was one of the original names of Star Wars, and it's supposed to be like the adventures of like Luke Scott Starkiller, the Chronicle of the Wills or whatever it was going to be called. So it was nice to see a nod to that, like those early drafts of the first Star Wars script. And same thing, Kyber crystals were also a nod to that, which is going to be a very big part of the Star Wars trilogy originally, or the original movie, and ended up not making a cut.
Yeah, that was also in the Gennady Tartakovsky series.
Yes.
They go through a whole series of assembling a lightsaber from the Kyber crystals.
Right.
Yeah, that was terrible. That actually, like the destruction of, seeing the destruction of the temples and knowing that they were just mining the Kyber crystals to be the heart of the Death Star. Oh,
so cool. So cool. Very good. Very good. I don't know. Great way to tie all that stuff together. You know?
Yeah.
That's again, one thing I think this movie did well.
I was genuinely upset when I was like, oh, the Emperor is so bad. He turned the lightsaber crystals into the Death Star. Hey, how many units of those jewel pendants do you think you have?
How many units of those jewel pendants?
Yeah, you know, her necklace is gonna have to sell. They're gonna have a necklace.
Oh,
made
my God,
of kyber,
are you kidding
crystal.
Me?
Right.
I got crates of those things back here. I gotta move them. Put them in the movie.
Yeah.
She wears a crystal necklace.
It's this big.
Or we don't make this picture.
Nate, you have a theory of conservation of the Force? What?
Oh, yeah. It's about Chirrut Imwe's death. So the theory is that there's only so much Force to go around.
Oh, God.
And if the Force knows that someone's going to die anyway, give them just enough mojo to walk 20 feet and flip the switch that they have to, but then save the rest of your Force for the other characters who are still climbing the data tower.
But I thought we already established her climbing abilities were super powered.
Yeah, but she had to get through those pointy sphincters.
Oh, yeah.
And so she still needed some mojo. So if you let some Ewoks take out a giant robot or something, then you gotta have some good guys have to be captured or killed to balance that out.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Gotta balance the Force. Makes sense.
And so there's a novel by John Scalzi called Red Shirts. And it was the winner of the 2013 Hugo and Locus Awards for Best Sci-Fi Novel. And here's a spoiler. So cover your ears and say la 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 for 30 seconds if you don't want to hear it. It's a book where characters are being killed off mysteriously in kind of ridiculous ways. And the antagonist in the book is the narrative, which is omnipotent semi-sentient power that kills off characters. Pretty much just to advance other characters and add some tension to the world.
That sounds cool. I'd like to read that.
Yeah, I think I want to read that.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's all spoiled.
La, la, la. Well, you should have covered your fingers, man.
The other thing I wanted to say about Donnie Yen's character, Chirrut Imwe, is that I did find him constantly saying, the Force is with me. I'm one with the Force. Pretty annoying.
Yeah,
I might be alone on that, but I did find that to be like, oh, come on, man. You know, I get what you're doing there. You're meditating or whatever. Just say it quieter, please.
Yeah, it's like if I Am Groot wasn't funny.
Yeah, and him saying it over and over again as fast and as loud as he could. Like, enough, please.
I am Groot. 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 I am Groot.
See, enough. See, I hate it already.
You know, one of the highlights of seeing the movie a second time was we got to see the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 trailer. That was pretty good. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I think it's going to be all right. I like that the end of every trailer is a really funny line from Batista, also known as Drax. Because I didn't really like Drax in the first one, and everyone did. So the fact that he looks really good going into this, like, I think I might even end up liking this one more. We'll see.
Yeah.
Anyways, Baze Malbus.
This is another one who is significantly misunderstood, right? Like, Shivam, once again referencing Shivam, he pointed out that this is a classic duo in, he says, Dharmic traditions, but, and I've also seen it in what is it, some Japanese movies as well, right, where there's an itinerant monk and then there's this somewhat unbelieving follower who exists to protect him. And she even says it's typically portrayed as a master and apprentice sort of thing. So it's another echo to the entire Star Wars, of the entire Star Wars motif. But once again, silly death, accidental.
Oh, that, yeah, this was the one where I was like, that's war, man.
This is, Baze was played by Zhang Wen, by the way.
So like, Shivam says in his tweets there, it's like, some people are reading them as gay, and I think it's tempting to do that, but I did not think that about
no
that.
Not once, right?
And you know, if they did mean that, well, okay, that's fine, it doesn't bother me at all, but I just don't think that that's what they meant.
Yeah, there was zero romance in that relationship.
Yeah, there were no fun looks at each other. There were no, like, you know, tender moments, except for when he's dying at the end. And if you're going to read that as some sort of sexualized thing, I think you might have other problems.
you may want to consult a professional.
Yeah, right? Like, yeah, this is this guy's, like, best friend, probably, who's just died. So, you know, let's just, again, not that there's any problem if they were, but I just don't think that that's what was intended by the, by the filmmakers.
Yeah, that's another thing. I loved that, except for the implication of Galen Erso and mom, whose name was said once, there was no romance in this movie, right? There was not one. Strong female lead, a supporting male lead, and they did not have a romantic moment. They were just at the end, even when they're hugging and looking into each other's faces, it's just they're two people who've done some crazy shit and they're about to die.
The old rule in Hollywood is that if you're going to make a movie, you have to have a main female character, and then you have to have a romance happen. That's just like the old rules of Hollywood. And I feel like when they were like, well, if we have a main female character, we don't need romance, right? which is true, I think, actually. But I don't think, but like, it's not because there's a main female role. I just don't think you always need to add romance. I think we're kind of trained to expect it. So it didn't bother me, but it did feel like there was some opportunity for it. And there were a few moments, like when they're in the elevator and they're looking at each other, I was like, oh. It's like I really felt like for these two characters, like in another time, you know, if it wasn't under these circumstances, these two could have gotten together.
Yeah.
But everything in their lives is ruined by this rebellion against the Empire, and that's what's overtaken this. So actually, I kind of appreciated that they showed us that for like a second, and then they didn't ruin it at the end by having them like kiss while they were getting killed or something.
That would have been horrible.
It would have been so cheesy. Yeah. So I thought they handled that very like tastefully. I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, sorry, I tried to kill your dad. You want a smooch? No.
Yeah,
no, I didn't think so.
No, okay, sure.
I misunderstood.
She does get over that very quickly. Anyways. Well, because he didn't do it, right? He's like, I didn't do it, did I? Like, yeah, again, that scene liked.
I didn't do it, did I?
Yeah.
If I wanted your father dead, he would have been dead.
And then she would have been like, my name is Jin Erso. You killed my father.
Yeah.
So at this point, we have Mon Mothma, who played by Genevieve O'Reilly. That was a nice, solid role. It wasn't spectacular, but it's not meant to be spectacular. It's Mon Mothma.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have CG characters. How about that?
Yeah, how about that?
What did you guys think about them?
I thought Peter Cushing was well done.
Yeah, it was well done. I think it looked great. But I think, though, they were too much like it. Like, this was their Death Star. This was Disney's Death Star. They were so proud of it that they made Peter Cushing CG and made him look so good that they just kept showing it off. And I was Vader going, don't be so proud of this technological terror you've constructed. Because it's obviously CG though still. Like if we get a good look at it, and it does take you out of it a bit, I think.
Yeah, I thought the first time he appeared, and where most of his appearance was reflected in the glass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I realize that sounds really cynical, but when he turned around and it was dark, and it was like okay, That CG, I recognize it. My son even said at the end of the movie, he goes, hey, Dad, I think that guy in the dark suit who took over the Death Star, I think he was CG. And I'm like, yes. So when it was dark and, you know, he was only on screen for a few seconds, it could be carried off. His eyes were not misshapen, none of the other things that we'll talk about in a minute. But I thought they carried that off well. And then the more he was exposed, the more we kept seeing of him, the less real he looked. And it more, and I thought they just, they overexposed it, right? And I know they had to because of the I want the attention of the Emperor motivation. But still, really, they needed to put him in more darkness and otherwise kind of try to visually obscure the fact that, visually obscure his face.
Or, you know, hire an actor to play it. You know what I mean? Like,
shut
they hired
your mouth.
They hired another actor to play Mon Mothma, to play General Dodonna. Why, we've hired an actor in the past to play General Tarkin or
Well, they did hire an actor, but they superimposed part of the face.
Well, it was just makeup. I don't think it was superimposed because there's a picture of him with all the makeup on.
But it was someone who looked like Peter Cushing.
For sure. And he didn't have any lines. So, like, I understand. But I think you could have cast this part. It just did not need to be CGI. Like, I really. And we're not even talking about the, like, ethical issues of casting a dead actor without his actual permission.
They had his estate's permission.
Of course. Of course they did, right? Of course they had his estate's permission. And, you know, his kids get free money, right? Like, great. Good for them. I'm sure they love that. As, you know, and there's nothing really legally and all that wrong with it. But, like, Peter Cushing never said okay to be in this movie. And I think that that's a weird thing going forward with this technology. I mean, we've already seen it. It's not like this is new. Like, Fred Astaire dancing a vacuum cleaner commercial, you know? But that was repurposed footage, right? That's a little different. This is a new performance by a dead actor, which is... And a voice actor, to be sure, as well. But that's... Yeah. It gave me the heebie-jeebies, man. It gave me the willies a little bit.
You're okay with Red Leader and Gold Leader?
I'm more okay with them because it was just repurposed footage, and those guys said, those guys are in. I don't know. It's weird. It's weird gray. I had a big discussion with this with my wife's brother over Christmas, and we really did not come to any conclusions. We were just kind of discussing it for like a really long time.
Yeah. No, it was really weird though.
Yeah, and then you got Carrie Fisher, and it's like, little did we know, we got another performance by a dead actress, unfortunately. But it didn't need to be also, like, that's the other thing. Or at least that one made more sense, right? That one, Carrie Fisher was there to say yes, of A, and B, it's like, well, she's still in these movies, so let's get a younger version of her to be in it. Like, if they just, imagine it was just that the CGI was just Carrie Fisher at the end, and it's like, oh, that's a nice surprise, because it's only for like a second you see her, and then it's over. Oh, fun.
A second is long enough to see all the deformities, though.
I agree. That one is definitely weirder looking, no question about it. But, you know, whatever. I'm not going to deny that it was kind of cool, though, at the same time, right? Getting a new performance out of Peter Cushing was cool. And as my friend who, again, big Star Wars fan, my man Greg, I'll shout him out, Greg Poland, he said, he's like, Peter Cushing did, like, horror schlock, like, crappy horror movies his whole career. Like, he'd be honored to be in another Star Wars movie. And I guess, you know, that's probably true.
That's very true. That's very true.
Christopher Lee.
Oh, yeah, Christopher Lee.
Yeah, same thing.
Another horror movie actor.
Him and Christopher Lee, right? Dracula and Van Helsing.
So I guess we're left with the most important question of the movie.
What are the pointy metal sphincters at the top of the data tower?
Yeah.
What are those things?
Well, wait a second now. Hang on. Very quick, because Nate, this is for sure you, right?
Yeah. I was wondering.
Yeah. You know what a sphincter is, right?
Sure.
So, oh, okay. So you're talking about the, like, the sphincter that was opening and closing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? Why was that opening and closing?
It's like a hungry starfish.
There was no explanation as to why that was, like, going. I also found that to be, like, an added weird, like, well, will she or won't we? Like, will she get her legs chopped off by this thing? It's like, come on. No. We know this. Anyways. Good question, though. I agree.
Well, what was that movie?
What movie?
The movie with, I can't remember. The space movie that Sigourney Weaver was in.
Aliens?
Galaxy Quest. No, Galaxy Quest.
Oh.
It's like that scene in Galaxy. When I saw the sphincters, like everybody in the theater, a lot of people in the theater chuckled. And all I could recall at that moment was the scene with the fires and the smashers in the back at the end of Galaxy Quest in the back of the cruiser in the engine room. You guys haven't seen Galaxy Quest?
I have, yes, but I don't remember any of it. Yeah.
Oh well, yeah, it was one of those, and they kept asking like, who built this? Why is this here? But you know, I guess every movie needs a chomping sphincter.
Mm-hmm. I guess every movie needs a chomping sphincter is the bottom line here. I got 20 stuffed animals and a chomping sphincter back here. You're putting in a chomping sphincter or this picture is not seeing the light of day. This guy's got stuffed animals of the chomping sphincter.
Someone call Gary Whitta in here. Get him in here right now.
Well, we don't have room for a bunch of conveyor belts suspended over an abyss with smashers on them. So, just throw a couple of sphincters up there.
One chopping sphincter's fine, thank you. I just need the one.
You have to wonder, like, what was going through Jin's mind when she got to the top of that? She's like, all right, I've just used my climbing superpower again. Now, what the hell is this?
Yeah, what the hell?
What the hell?
And we haven't even talked about the ridiculousness of the way the Empire stores their data.
Yeah, I know.
just in like a giant like crevice with like a spire in the middle and
yeah.
This overly complicated way of getting it out with like these two remote control arms. Like, what? Come on, guys, get a hard drive.
I need another token for the claw game. It slipped out.
Yeah, exactly. So ridiculous.
What I loved was, so they go through that incredible effort to store data like that, but then the claws, they don't have a viewer on them. So you have to kind of like lean over and see if you're getting the blinking green light.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what if you get the wrong cart?
Then it's not going
to
blink.
Didn't K2 have to like light up which one it was they were looking for?
Yeah, yeah.
What? How does that work? Yeah. The guy in the other room is going to tell you which one to get?
Yeah, they yell back, hey.
Hey,
it's a very secure data system, sir.
I need to pull up the schematic for the bathroom. Okay, which one's that? I don't know. It's called like Dark Saber or Brown Poo or something.
I don't know. Just look for poo.
Okay, found it. Here it comes. I missed it. I couldn't see. I was looking at the wrong part of the spire. All right, I'll light it up again for you. It's like they should have made this one system.
Terrible. Screaming back and forth, you guys in this room. Oh my God, what a nightmare it'd be to work for the Empire.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. They intentionally make it difficult, don't they?
Yeah, they must. Yeah. Yeah. I can just see the writers coming up with that part, too. It's like, man, well, there's a lot of action going on in this part, but really, K2, Cassian, and Jin are just in this room, and all they need to do is get like a disc.
Yeah.
Well, let's put it in like a spire or something. Let's put it in like a floating above a, an abyss. I was like, oh, okay, sure. We'll do another abyss. Star Wars loves their abysses, that's for sure.
Come down to Crazy Sal's Abyss Warehouse. We got crevices. We got grottos. We got giant pits in the ground. Come on down.
We got Cloud City. We got Scarif. You name it, we got it. I got 100 abysses back here, and I need to move these units. Put it in the movie.
Yeah, we got these abyss bouncy houses. We got to sell them.
We need the kids to want to get their own data tapes.
Yeah, that's what they're jumping for. But, Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Nate, you have the machete order.
Yeah, so in around 2011, this guy, Rod Hilton, came up with an answer to the question, what order should you show the films to someone who's never seen Star Wars before? Doesn't know anything about it, hasn't watched a single movie. What order do you show the movies? So, first, Episode 4, A New Hope. Second, Episode 5, Empire Strikes Back. Now, we're going to take a break. We're going to switch back. Third, Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. Then fourth, episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. And then we go back to fifth, episode 6, Return of the Jedi. So the reason is, this creates a lot of tension after the cliffhanger ending of episode 5. It also uses the original trilogy as a framing device for the prequel trilogy. And so Vader drops this huge bomb that he's Luke's father. Then we spend 2 movies proving he's telling the truth. Then we see how it gets resolved. The Star Wars watching viewing experience gets to start with a film that does the best job of establishing the Star Wars universe, episode 4, and it ends with the most satisfying ending, episode 6.
Mm-hmm.
And so this order skips episode 1. I was quoting Rod Hilton there in one of his posts. So this order skips episode 1, Phantom Menace, entirely, which I think is a plus.
Yeah, because it's completely useless.
Yeah, and I would actually recommend when you start episode 2, you fast forward to the point where Kenobi gets to Kamino. And that skips a lot of scenes that just basically feature Anakin being annoying. So my question is, since Rogue One directly leads into the opening scene of episode 4, should this now be the first film viewed for Star Wars noobs?
That's a good question. I don't think so, because I think what the point of watching episode 4 first is to, what he said, like establish the Star Wars universe, and I think that still does a better job of it. Whereas this is, I don't know where you would put this, though. I can't really think of any place that makes a lot of sense. Maybe, I don't know, because it's separate. It's not part of the saga. So actually, I don't even think it's considered in the Machete Order. I wouldn't consider it.
What do you think, Phil?
I think I would play it before episode 4.
All right.
Why is that?
I think it does a pretty good, not the best job of setting the Star Wars universe up, because it does a lot of planet hopping. And so a viewer of this film going into another Star Wars film should not be surprised by so many different planets and visiting so many different locales and scenes. And when you watch Star Wars, the big question at the end of that movie is always like, well, why didn't they build fail-safes into the Death Star to prevent exactly this from happening? And so it answers that question. And so I think, and I haven't done this yet, we actually have, I think I have the theatrical version downstairs, right? And I haven't watched it yet, but I think what this will feel like is at the end of that, it's a much more satisfying conclusion to that particular part of the story, as opposed to always wondering, like, you know, how did the Death Star have such a fragile self-destruct system, basically? You know, like, oh, just push this red button. Sure, it's a tiny button. But push this button and it blows up the entire Death Star. And I think now we have the answer to that.
There? Oh, this guy. He put the button there. Good job, guy. Thanks.
Thanks, guy. It does kind of mess with the Machete Order a little bit.
Yeah, it seems weird to me to introduce a new person to Star Wars by introducing them to 4 or 5 characters that you'll never see again. Because the Star Wars main story, the Machete Order, is for that story. And this is pretty separate from that story.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems weird to open with it. I would show them it after Force Awakens. Yeah. Anyways, but you know, who knows, right? Like, you know, maybe we'll find some weirdo who's never seen any of these movies before and we'll test it out on them.
We'll have a new order.
Oh, nice.
I would put it right after Jedi.
Oh yeah, after Jedi. That's a reasonable spot, I think.
And it kind of closes that loop, freshens the palate for The Force Awakens and whatever happens next.
Oh, God.
That's a good point.
And we get to see more of Emperor Boba Fett.
You really think he's Boba Fett?
I think he's Boba Fett.
I sincerely hope not.
If Darth Maul can get new legs and do 2 more episodes, then I think Boba Fett can get a few more movies.
Well, they're going to make a Boba Fett movie, though, aren't they?
Yeah, why would they do that?
It's on the slate.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Got to establish that character a bit more for some reason.
Episode 8 is this year, isn't it? 2017?
Is it? I thought it was 2018.
Yeah, they're milking it once a year.
Oh, well, that sounds great, and I'm very excited about it.
Maybe it'll be the Boba Fett standalone, though. I don't know. We'll see.
Isn't the Han Solo standalone? No, you're right. It's not before Episode 8.
Oh, with C.G. Harrison Ford?
Of course. Who else?
Man, that would be excellent.
There's a really weird movie with Robin Wright in it that's all about CGI characters and owning the and like studios owning an actor's likeness and all this. Can't remember the name of it, but it's it asks a lot of these questions and talks about them a lot, and it's a, not a great movie. In fact, it's pretty bad, but it's called The Congress. That's what it's called.
Oh, okay.
And it's she plays herself and she sells her image, and so they kind of explore those questions of, like, you know, does an actor own their own image even though they're in another movie, and, you know, they play characters and blah blah blah, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I've read some short stories to that effect as well.
Yeah.
Always sort of chilling, especially the consequences if you sell your image and your likeness.
Oh yeah, this movie goes real far with it. Like, she goes way into the future, and it's all animated, and she's like, the studio wants to sell her, like, as a flavor and as, like, a smell and all this stuff. It's really weird. That's where it loses me a little bit. Anyways, back to Star Wars.
All right, so you say back to Star Wars, but I believe we are at the end of the episode, or nearly
we
so.
We are. Mm-hmm.
Nate always has a message for us.
Yeah, hopping around YouTube. And if you want to watch videos of a funny girl who's poking holes in current pop culture movies, especially Star Wars movies, there's Jenny Nicholson. So you can look her up. Her latest video at the time of recording this is the top 10 worst reasons you liked Rogue One.
That's awesome.
So there you go. There's a link.
And we'll put the link in the show notes, of course. It's probably worth mentioning, if anybody has made it through this long, Happy New Year. For a little behind the scenes, we are actually recording this on New Year's Eve. Thank you for taking the time, Andy, to come hang out with us.
Thanks very much for having me. It's my pleasure. I'll talk Star Wars anytime with you guys.
Yeah, well, next year, huh?
Yeah, let's do it. Book it. New Year's Eve next year.
Yeah, you're always welcome to come on the show, and even when we're not talking about Star Wars.
Cool.
Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. If you like what you heard, go visit our Patreon, patreon.com/commander@MTG. Andy appears every week. So you do Commander's Brew, and
I do another podcast called The Bachelor Pod, and it's about The Bachelor. So we'll be starting that up in January. If you guys are fans of ABC's The Bachelor or Bachelorette, you can check that one out.
Cool.
Something tells me it's not a big overlap of our audience there.
It's a surprisingly small overlap, I think.
I think there is actually zero overlap from the two podcasts I do, from Commander's Brew and The Bachelor Pod. They're both very vocal and, like, great communities of people, but I've never seen one ever talk about the other. it's pretty crazy. But yeah, well, I guess I'm the only guy in the world who plays Magic and also watches The Bachelor.
Well, Sean Watson uses a different account for that. So.
What's that?
To talk about The Bachelor. Yeah.
Okay. I need to know it then.
He's got a, yeah.
Yeah. He took time out from his LARPing to let us know that.
Great.
Do we have a LARP update? We forgot entirely to check back in with Sean.
Oh, he and his Guild of Assassins have just occupied the ruins of Aardvark Castle in northern Scotland. And they're gearing up to defend against an amphibian invasion from the nearby loch.
And is this still LARPing, or did this turn real?
Oh, yeah, still okay. LARPing. He hasn't started his actual rebellion yet.
Right.
I was going to say, none of this has actually happened, right? We're not.
This is just a dry run.
Okay, great, great.
Well, again, thanks for joining us. This was a ton of fun. I haven't laughed this hard in a very long time.
It was great. I had a lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
All right, and thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the show. Go visit Commander's Brew.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
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 Yeah, that was a horrible ending. That's great.
So. Clean that up, will ya? awesome, though. Really, honestly, thanks for having me on, guys. I really had a good time. This is great.
Yeah, this was awesome. Thank you.
And have a lovely New Year's Eve here, and have a happy new year.
Yeah.
I'll see. Are you guys all going to GP Vegas?
Yes, we are.
Nice.